Now, Jim, show this gentleman how you can dance and sing.
That's my attitude towards the Western powers. If you want to say there's no wars, fine. Don't go crying for your money when that comes.
America today finds herself in a unique situation. She's the only country in history in a position to become involved in a bloodless revolution.
If America does not respond creatively to the challenge to banish racism, some future historian will have to say that a great civilization died because it lacked the soul and commitment to make justice a reality for all men.
When the system doesn't work for the majority of the people, you gotta change the system.
Well, welcome, my family, my friends, and all the new people who might be hearing this, welcome. This is an incredibly important podcast for me. Class War Battlefield. From the moment that I started it was created for two reasons, and two predominant reasons. The first was to provide to me a way to speak a truth that I did not hear expressed other places. And the second reason was to give amplification, a place of amplification, to voices that were speaking good truth, but were rarely ever heard from in the media, rather liberal or conservative. I have my critiques of both. But today, I bring to you something that came out of one of the most tumultuous times in my life. A time that when history tells it, when I tell it, awoken me. It woke me up. It sparked my gut. The spark was laying there. It was there dormant. But it was during this time period that it flared. Now, this time period was one where my future at my current resting place, the place where I call home, was uncertain. I was going through financial difficulties brought about by the fact that I was fired from a job which, like many other jobs in America, was low paying and yet high grossing. The company I worked for, Zotos International, made over $300 million in their last fiscal year. They made, according to one of the full-timers there who I talked to, who disclosed it to me because he found out during a meeting after looking at some papers that he wasn't supposed to see, they made $1 million a day. Yet they were paying their, quote, associates $9.25. Of course, if you were on what's called a tow motor, you made more. You know, that's a forklift. And if you were out back in what's called compounding, you made a little more because you were dealing with chemicals. And I suppose if you worked in the lab, you made a little bit more, not much. But if you were the person actually on in the production area, which I was, you were making $9.25. Now, this may, to those of you making $8, you know, seem like a very good deal. Here's the problem with that. You got it backwards. Whereas I see a problem with you making $8, you look at me and say, why are you complaining? You could be making $8. No, that's the wrong argument. You're making the argument for your master. You should be making the argument against your master. Why aren't you making $9.25? Why aren't you making $10? If you're working at McDonald's, there is very few McDonald's, even Burger King, fast food joints, just say fast food joints, that aren't making significant amount of money. Why are they paying you such low wages? That is the question. But anyway, so at this job, I went from one department to another. In the first department I was in, it was okay. I worked for a great guy. And I'm not saying that the guy who I worked for in the second department wasn't good. I was friends with him. He was a really good guy. didn't kind of help me in the end, but whatever. But I was warned before I moved to the department that it was different than the one that I was coming from. The one that I was coming from, I was walking around a lot, which was good, but I was shown respect. The guy who I worked for showed me respect. He respected the fact that I was a hard worker and that even though I didn't necessarily enjoy doing my job, I did it well. And he showed me respect, and for that reason, I was very respectful. I didn't shake anything up, and that was fine. But I suppose I'm a spiritual person. God puts us in places to make sure that we can access who we truthfully need to be for the moments in which we are going to be forced to live in. Through a breakup, which was my ride there, and then subsequently the person who I was riding in with shifted and moved to the department that I'd be going into, production, I lost reliable transportation. That forced me, after a couple of weeks of trying to stay on the shift that I was on, to shift over to production. And I was warned, they don't respect you. I was warned, they work you to death and they do not care. I was warned. And I said to them, I will change their minds because I am a hard worker. And I show everybody respect. I will change their minds. Within a couple of weeks, it was pretty evident to me that they didn't care, the majority. Some of them did. A lot of them showed me respect. A lot of the regular on-the-ground people. But many of the supervisors, many of the individuals who were tasked with being, quote, team leaders, they didn't care. Their goal, I realized, was to break me down so that all I would do is look at them as a superior, and I refuse to do that. They are humans just like me. They are not superior. After dealing with that for nearly 2 months, actually over 2 months, I finally asked my floor supervisor if it was okay if I started writing messages on the back of my shirt. We had company shirts that we were supposed to wear. He told me, go ahead. He said, fine, do it. And I asked him, you know, if I'm asked about this, I'm going to say you told me and send them your way. He said, fine, go ahead, do your thing. So I started writing on my shirts. I started writing messages to support the New York strikers, the New York City fast food strikers. I started writing statements supporting labor unions. Some not outright, but most, you know, you could tell. I started writing things about Martin Luther King. And for 2 months I went on doing this. And then some things started happening, actually. People started getting worse. The attitude started dramatically changing. And personally, I started going through a revolution, or a evolution of sorts, where I was learning more and more stuff about what was going on in the world. And I was starting to see clearly why I was feeling the way I was feeling about certain things. I was starting to understand that we were standing at the, or we are standing, on the edge of industrial collapse. And things are likely to get a lot worse before they get better. And only the companies that demonstrate social responsibility and social consciousness and transition from being wholly owned corporations to those that are more locally controlled will survive. They also have to kind of let go of the fiat currency a little bit too. They got to start changing that too, but that's for another time. So I started writing more in-your-face things on my shirts. One such statement was gleaned right from a Martin Luther King speech from 1967. It said, and I quote, "Like the prophet of old, I have seen the coming of judgment for Remedy," which was the temporary company I worked for, "and Zotos International. And I've seen them weighed in the balance of history, and they've been found wanting. Judgment was coming upon them," I noted. Soon after that shirt, in April of this year, I was asked into the office and told to change the tone to be more team-oriented. Well, I also was asked to sign a write-up slip, which ignorantly I did without reading it. I trusted my Remedy rep. Never again. Well, the next day I wrote another shirt. This one said, and I quote, "Be like the founding fathers. Move beyond exploitation. Unionize your country today." I was fired. Consequently, because of that, when I tried to obtain New York State unemployment, I found out that Remedy was challenging my suit because, they said, I had altered the uniform which I was wearing. Not only had I altered it, but they said I had wrote graffiti on it. I had to laugh. Because the ignorance of these people to believe that because I'm black, the only thing I can write is graffiti, is mind-numbing. But I ended up winning. It just took 2.5 to 3 weeks. But during this time period, I was threatened with eviction. And that, it was through that incredible pressure that I found my voice. And not only that did I find my voice, but I realized there was a lot of things that I had been wanting to say for a long time that I had been stopping myself from saying. And that's where this comes in. Ladies and gentlemen, In a few moments, I'm going to play a song. I am going to bring to you a reading, which I recorded, of a piece that I wrote and published on opednews.com. You can also find it, I'm including the hyperlink in the show notes here. But you can find it, and I urge you actually to go and see it and to read it, because there's a cover to it. You can find a copy of this paper, this article, at scribd.com, S-C-R-I-B-D.com. It is called, O Citizen, Why Do You Work? I'm dedicating it to you, all of you. I'm dedicating it to my family, particularly to my parents, who both, well, my father was born before what we call the Civil Rights Movement, so he remembered the Civil Rights Movement. My mother was born in the midst of the Civil Rights Movement. Both have been dead and gone for quite some time. My father almost 20 years. My mother almost 15. So I dedicate it to them, because in me, I know they have left the sparks that flew during the 60s. And even though life is never going to take up that fervor again, there is a dramatic need for reordering of our priorities, or else the consequences will be deadly. I am not going to read the letter to the readers that I included in the booklet. So I urge you to go and read that. But after this song, O Citizen, Why Do You Work? Let me know what you think.
It's peace train, holy road. Everyone jump upon the peace train. Ooh-wah, yee-yah, ooh-wah. I'm on peace train. Now get your bags together. Go! Bring your good friends too. Cause it's getting nearer. It soon will be with you. Now come and join the lift. You know, it's not so far from you. Oh, peace train sounding loud. I'm on the peace train. Come on, peace train. Peace train. Now I've been crying lately, thinking about the world as it is. Why must we go on hating? Why can't we live in bliss? It's out on the edge of darkness. There rides a peace train. A peace train, take this country. Come take me home again. A peace train sounding loud. Fly on the peace train. Ooh-wah-ee-yah-ooh-wah. Come on, peace train. It's peace train, hold.
Thank you. I love you.
Why do you work, O Citizen? Do you work for your car? for your home, or for your family. No, you work for fear. No, not out of fear, or even out of being fearful. For fear. To work out of fear implies you acknowledge the fear within and are implementing tactics to remove yourself from it. Likewise, to work out of being fearful suggests you have an awareness of the threat causing you fear. However, to work for fear conjures a hologram. For is considered non-personal and outside the soul or self. You work, O citizen, for fear of your boss firing you for not being productive enough. You work for fear of losing your health insurance, itself a mechanism of fear. You have it for fear of sickness, do you not? You work for fear of the grocer not selling you any more food. For fear of the electric company cutting off the energy they provide you. You work for fear of losing your home and car to the companies who enable you to borrow them while you pay them, the companies, for the privilege of doing so. But ultimately, you work for fear of the creditors who've given you loans with usurious rates, encouraging you to indulge in life's necessities while simultaneously ensuring an uncontestable life sentence of employment in order to repay them. In short, O citizen, you work to stave off lack. Lack of food, lack of shelter, lack of clothing, lack of utilities, and most consequently, lack of money, the purchaser of those things. O citizen, don't you know scarcity is abundance manipulated and money is the instrument of its manipulators? Is it not the cause of all your stress and misery? Is it not the cause of all your uncertainties and the cause of unsettlement, even in times of relative ease? When others lack it, do you not say they are broken, worthless, and undeserving of life's necessities? When held in abundance, do you not place upon its holders and their benefactors sacredness, holiness, and godliness? Do you not envy those benefactors? Do you not place their proponents on a pedestal? Have you not wished to be them? O citizen, they who you admire, the proponents of money, are the living damned. Their souls, sold upon Lucifer's auction block, are marked with incurable leprosy. They possess appreciation for the shallow and disdain for the divine. They clutter themselves with forced light to hide their darkness. However, their actions betray them. Look upon their words and deeds comparatively and render your own judgment. Money is their lifeblood because it enables superiority to reign within their hearts and instigates violence to feed their need for control. It is through this violence, both soft scarcity and hard oppression, that they've brought you to your current state. Like titans upon Mount Olympus, they look down at your struggling to survive using the procurement allotted to you by them with disgust. Paraphrasing one of their old benefactors, whose heart stood motionless after mowing down an impoverished child living in his nation, "What are you to the affairs of their wealth state?" they ask. This is the branding in which they have placed upon you, O citizen. Your worth does not figure into the calculation of their wealth, nor does your loyalty matter to their state. Your existence stands so long as they will it. To ensure your compliance, they can excite forces beyond your reach. Markets can be made unstable, bankrupting you. Government agents can be dispatched to tie you up in resource-sapping litigation. And privatized henchmen donning government approval can assault your daily life through scare tactics and non-personal injuries. In these actions, they are proclaiming for all to see, O citizen. They are the titans, and you, the mere mortal. History class prepared you for this understanding, including the consequences. In that class, you read, all great visionaries who possessed a conflicting vision from that of the titans did not live long. All great martyrs, while motivated by high ideals and unscrupulous principles, did not live long. You read that all their hopes and dreams, unfulfilled at the time of their deaths, passed quickly from the minds and actions of those who were left behind. Thus, you wager, it is no use to struggle against the titans, for they always win. Oh, what fool you are to believe these lies. It is the titans who die generationally from general spite. While it is the nonconformist visionaries, those men and women imparted with divine wisdom who live perpetually in the hearts of the masses who yearn for some just like them to lead with dignity, honor, strength, courage, righteousness, and humility. People who are motivated to their tasks by a conscious vision rooted in liberty, justice, equality, and freedom. The Titans, who opposed these leaders when they lived, brand all who supported them subversives and radicals, while labeling all who rejected their vision conservatives and liberals, patriots to their wealth state. Tell me, O citizen, do you not ascribe one of these labels to yourself, wearing the patriotic button with pride beneath it? I ask you, why? If they are sanctioned by the Titans, cannot their meaning only benefit them? When examined closely, has either offered you detachment from the Titans' political grip? Does either leave you now with any non-Titan political choices? No. These titles instead leave you operating in a political climate suitable only for those with the means not only to control the arrangements of the ballots, but the media championing the candidates who will appear on those ballots and the monetary donations funding the campaigns of those candidates. Oh, citizen, don't you see? These titles render those who wear them impotent and powerless in the cause of personal freedom and rights. Do you not see that by taking them up as your battle flag, you betray the causes of patriotism which, at its heart, has in it the protection of group liberty and popular sovereignty? Tell me, O citizen, do you not shun these principles for the benefits of the Titans, denouncing all who refuse to do so as traitors to their wealth state? What then is this patriotism but cast remote into blind obedience to their mandates? O citizen, do you not see how your own actions belittle your worth and reinforce theirs? Do you not see how you perpetuate their superiority complex by adhering to their flawed notion of patriotism and their shallow monetary vision, feeding its existence in your silent capitulation? Can you not recognize how money encourages the Titans to segregate themselves from you so as to make your needs and desires conspicuous to their own? Do you not see how they use their money to remain impersonal and distant? Have you not noticed how the bankers, those damned souls who manipulate money's value and give money its validity and weight, dwell in skyscrapers, looking upon you like gods hovering above their creation? Have you not noticed how they threaten annihilation to all who refuse to pay tribute to them, like Roman legions set loose amongst the conquered people? Have you not the awareness to see how they have talked eloquently, sometimes majestically, about peace in the abolition of scarcity through their financial system? Talk unchanged for 150 years? I ask you, O citizen, where is the fulfillment of these promises? Have you not waited long enough for its unfolding? O citizen, money is their leash upon you. Do you not see how it constrains your mobility? Do you not see how it taints your worldview and manages your habits without your consent? Can you not see how they will your weekly inheritance, suppressing its growth so they can amass more fiat wealth while saddling you with more false debt, owed to them so they can perpetuate your need for their employment? Can you not see their wages are but warfare against your person, debilitating your soul and body all at once? Can you not see the misery they have set upon your generations? Then I ask you, O citizen, why do you work? Is money not the basis of your fear? Without their money, are you not labeled substanceless, meaningless, and purposeless? With it, are you labeled otherwise? Without their money, are you not warned life will become non-existent? Is not a paraphrasing of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation motto heaped upon you with scorn? Is it not said that you should, quote, be productive to be lively, free, and prosperous, or do not be, unquote? They have lied to you, O citizen. Have I not proved that claim wrong? Have I not shown you that life with money is non-existent? Do you not now possess the awareness to see money for the farce that it is? And can you not now see fear for the tool that it is? O citizen, money is fiat, a myth, a mirage in the consumer desert, drawing you deeper into its inner hell, keeping you restless when you desperately want to rest. And fear... fear is the liquor enabling you to stumble through the demanded productivity of the Titans, the walk you must make towards the farce. Tell me, O citizen, in executing their demands, do you feel exceedingly lively? Do you feel abundantly freer? Do you feel inspirationally prosperous? Do you feel satisfyingly productive? Then why do you work, O citizen? Is it not out of being fearful? I ask you, what are you fearful of? The same implied dangers I spoke of above? O citizen, heed my words. recognize my sincerity. In America, her shores polluted already by centuries of high-priced swindlers, prideful for their ability to manipulate and manage public perception. Even that which might be positive here has been so ravaged by molestations that its liberating force leads only to enslavement. Alas, the Titans have created for you chains with no steel and locks without tumblers. You hold in your hands your own chains and the lock and key necessary to break them. Yet they have imposed ignorance upon you, clouding your judgment so as to render your perceptions corrupted by doubt. O citizen, can you not see their game in all of its bribery? To believe yourself working to get out of being fearful, you are tepidly admitting your powerlessness and willful subjugation to those who bind you. You are acknowledging by this admission that they hold sway over your ability to survive. There is an unseen threat, lack and scarcity, you contend, to your survival, and there is little, if anything, you can do about it. They, however, can protect you. But at what cost? Have you not heard the bell of discontentment in your heart, O citizen, when you have stood aside watching these thieves gain great advantage through trickery over the mastery of your fellow workers? Have you not swallowed that discontentment to maintain your employment, feeling betrayed as you did? Have you not talked bitterly with those who share similar discontent with you? Those who, like you, wish they could do something about the current order? I ask you, O citizen, why can't you do anything? Is it not fear? But fear of what? O citizen, I beseech you to see. The swindlers have you fearing your own survival by your own means. They threaten you with homelessness, starvation, infestation, and unproductiveness. Scarcity, they say, is the only measures of economic prosperity. Well, I say to them who have hurled such statements towards you, have you, O citizen worker, not produced? Have you not created magnificent homes in excess? Did your hands not bring forth from the soils of earth massive food quantities enough to feed the world two times over? Where then is the scarcity to be found? I assure you, O citizen, it exists in the empty hearts of those driving your soul to exhaustion. You produced abundance overflowing. Why should you, O citizen, now that the swindlers have created havoc in arenas you were not even invited to sit in, go without while they gorge themselves on luxuries permitted by your overachievements? O citizen, it must be stated plainly, for the swindlers tell you differently. They have done nothing to create the abundance, yet they claim the right to manage it. Claims which fall flat upon asking their technological and procedural knowledge of how you brought about these things. O citizen, by your own hand, once freed, would you be granted liberty to produce leisurely and live abundantly? Yet you forego this path for fear of personal responsibility and personal authorship or authority. O citizen, why do you work? One must live, yes, but to what extent is life lived when lies motivate the soul? O citizen, the Titans have fooled you. They've made you love their sickness and cherish their lies. Your work has been bonded to their sickness, and your reality has become dependent on their lies. Work replaced by employment equals, in their game, freedom subverted by the whip. Yet you believe this to be untrue because the Titans refuse to call it slavery. They have primed you with denials of subsistence without their employment. In their lies, self-sustainability without employment is inconceivable except for them. Well, I ask you, O citizen, does this not equal chattelism under another name? Is this not slavery of the mind, heart, and body? O citizen, how tragic it is that through their trickery you have been robbed of your heritage. How spiritually murderous it is that they have stolen from you the empowering days of labor congresses and non-industrial compliances, fearful policemen and conscious riots, dreadful losses and exhilarating gains. They have taken from you the invigorating language and actions of class struggling. Consequently, you have forgotten the full feeling of solidarity marches and the divine unity in the wildcat strike. You have forgotten the dream of owning society to mold it with consciously inspired hands. Have you not, O citizen, deep within your bones, the desire to take to the streets with your countrymen and women, knowing that your doing so is causing great agitation in the hearts of the Titans, who profess great admiration for protest, yet smite attempts at sustained protest by dispatching citizen troops against their own protectorates? I know of the lies they construct to convince you such acts are just, using law and order as cover. I know how their courtiers have told you about the illegality of the Wildcat Strike, and the Solidarity March, and the social unhealthiness of popular sovereignty and non-monetary visionaries. I know how they have filled you with patriotic arrogance, describing you as genuine Americans because you hide yourself away from these things. But I ask you now, from what motivations did they drink from before saying such things? Was it not from the bottles of public disassociation and counterinsurgency? Oh, citizen, can you not see? They have set upon you consciously an agenda of fragmentation and communal turmoil in order to break down solidarity and kinship. Can you not see? They have captured the language of class struggle and worker liberation, severed the tongue from your ancestors' mouth, and purged the blood of generations from your albums. In its place, they regurgitated violent propaganda, attaching superficial communications to bolster their revisions. Consequently, they have turned reality to twigs and fantasy into stones. They have constructed for you a fire which enchants you now as it approaches, harmlessly devouring the past, but aim ultimately for your future. I implore you to take heed now, for the shadows cast before your eyes play out your spiritual and physical demise. The Titans and their courtiers have crafted for you, O citizen, an amazing fairy tale to distract you from realizing this fate. A fairy tale meant to historically assassinate truth once and for all. A fairy tale composed of a subdued worker and a vibrant, compassionate, albeit fictitious, oligarch. A fairy tale where they fought for workers' rights and the minimum wage, where the Titans awarded workers weekends and unions somehow fought to suppress those aspirations. In their revision, all the great visionaries were industrialists, and the villains? Radicals. This fairy tale reconstructs class struggle to make the world of today plausible, yet it is not historically palpable. Today's Titan-dominated world is just the latest chapter of their fairy tale. In it, corporations are friendly promoters of human rights and dignity. Radical labor unions and their leaders, those advocating worker, community-owned and operated factories, schools, mines, and offices, are a threat to your well-being. Politics, in this new reality, are boiled down to left-right sloganeering. Environmentalism, global warming or climate change, is the hoax of the century, needing neither attention or regulatory intervention. And liberal democratic government, dedicated to the social commonwealth, that would be social welfare, ruins grassroots control and invites totalitarianism. In this new reality, you, O citizen, aren't a citizen at all, but a consumer to be manipulated, and a human resource to be eaten by the industrial giants. In this fairy tale, they own you. You eat what they tell you to eat, McDonald's, Burger King, and Taco Bell, to name a few, foregoing generations of family cookery for easy malnourishing foodstuffs, as it's called. You go where they tell you to go, Target, Best Buy, Walmart, to name a few, never grasping for anything outside the norm or, quote, mainstream. You think what they tell you to think, choose an opinion over serious debate, disinformation over facts, anti-intellectualism over intellectual depth, and Titan-serving actions over practical solutions benefiting all. It doesn't matter where you get your mainstream news, CNN, Fox News, MSNBC, liberal, conservative, libertarian, it's all Titan-controlled anyway. In this new reality, you hail who they tell you to hail. Denzel, Brad, Angelina, Miley, Barack, Mitt, Oprah, Rachel Ray, forgetting the martyrs and heroes who stood for a brighter future, a brighter future in part inhabited by you currently and left to you to finish. And in this new reality, you condemn who they tell you to condemn. Barack, Mitt, Jeremiah Wright, Muslim terrorists, Islamic terrorists, Mexicans, conspiracy theorists, anyone but the Titans. You do this, forgetting this unspoken commandment, to know thy own heart through knowing those branded the enemy. And you worship where they tell you to worship. whether that be at the mantle of militarism, consumerism, Christian fundamentalism, or atheism, believing God to be alive only through those actions. In this fairy tale, so readily embraced by you, you are owned mind, body, and soul. Yet you believe the exact opposite because they tell you it isn't so. Oh, citizen, can you not now see why you work? You work to free yourself from this ownership. For this new chapter declares you to be property without rights. It declares corporations to be humans lacking the biological or spiritual instruments of perception, regeneration, or death, while simultaneously declaring the community within, known as the fragmented psyche, to be more important than the community without. It declares money and all things amassed in great quantities by the Titans wealth-based, while declaring all things cherished by nonconformist visionaries, solidarity, popular sovereignty, and worker control of industry, impoverishing, unrealistic, and unachievable, and ultimately dangerous to your employment opportunities. It declares this society to be one of pure Titan ownership, and just like the Negro slave, you are a ship for a Titan owner. The word ship, when used as a suffix, means the state, condition, or quality of what is expressed in the root word. Your work, therefore, derives out of the fear of never being released from this ownership. I say to you today, O citizen, that you'll never be released. The owners do not wish it. Upon birth, you are certified by them to live within their constraints. Your birth certificate, like those awarded to prize dogs, cattle, and Negro slaves in a bygone generation and era, authorizes you to form relationships in their society. Immediately, debt is attached to your name as hospital bills mount and the rigors of planning for your life at the state level begins. From early in your life, you are taught to be submissive. Schooling is applied to you, not for you, as is often stated. For one does not apply disciplinary tactics onto a horse for her benefit, but for domesticated purposes benefiting the owner. Do they not? Here, work is jammed into your head as your salvation. Caste creates either affection or disdain for mental gymnastics and the intellectual curiosity accompanying them, or manual productive cravings, aka factory work, and the soul-sapping entrapments those motions entail. You are made to feel empowered through schooling or empowered through employment. Your place is made clear sooner rather than later, as most children can tell you, by third grade. Just observe their enthusiasm for school. Currently, O citizen, as you're reading this, you are weighed down by debt and seething with anger from years of belittlement by the careless Titans. I ask you, have you not saw the emptiness in this reality? Do you not see now why schooling or employment doesn't clench your soul's thirst? Do you not feel the burning anger within your stomach waiting for some spiritual action to arrive, enabling that feeling to spring forth, rejuvenating your heart, mind, and soul to a youthful vigor steeped in meaningfulness? Well then, citizen, congratulations. Your patriotism is alive. For there, in that flame, sparked by the reality you are now acknowledging, lays the visionary reality that'll turn back the destructive tides of the Titans. There lies the truth of patriotism, your strength, your drive, your will towards a conscious liberty that'll free yourself and those around you from the tyranny set upon you. In doing so, carry this recognition with you, O citizen. Rather working for fear or out of being fearful, you are not working through fear. Work, when paired with fear, is not work. It is employment. It is to be given a task, determined by a source other than the self, to do something the self finds meaningless. Yet it is done because the consequences of not doing so are frightful. This is our economic state at present. There, the Titans' fantasy made real. The wealthy have conned us into believing their employment scheme is work. We have allowed ourselves to be brainwashed into accepting their jobs for our jobs, as if they were the only ones who could produce jobs. They encourage us to embrace their vision and forego our vision. Do you remember it, citizen? The American dream of the 1890s, of the early 1900s, the 1910s, the 1920s, and the 1930s? Worker-owned factories, budding and flowering communities, strong unions for every man and woman, the 20-hour work week, do you remember it? To the trash bin of history they went by yesteryear's titans, who decreed them as socialistic, communistic, anarchistic, and blatantly un-American. All true, I'm afraid. Only if equality and self-preservation, community kinship and spiritual solidarity is likewise. In that American dream, our jobs supplanted their jobs, motivating our society to something higher than consumption, the coming of the kingdom of heaven to earth. And I do mean kingdom, not kingdom. In this American dream, our jobs built community, stimulated personal worth, and destroyed castes. Our jobs alleviated want, fulfilled necessities, and provided all who could not work with a place together with those who could work. Our jobs were not away from the home, per se. Some were, but many, like the husband and wife, were comfortably welcomed in the home. Our jobs were created to ensure social welfare, to promote social responsibility, and to construct communal cohesiveness. Our jobs stimulated the soul, radiated the intelligences, and emphasized our individual uniqueness. Ask yourself, O citizen, how many of their jobs do those things? Then why do you work? Look into your heart, O citizen of human consciousness. If not for the obligations the titans had heaped upon your back, would you enter an employment agreement? Of course you wouldn't. It is through these obligations, a phrase derived from the term obliged, meaning to constrain in any manner, to place under necessity, to compel, to render indebted, that you are made to fear unemployment. Alas, that fear must be confronted, for employment is not only the current state of the foreseeable future, but stands as a necessity for human survival. Do not fear, O citizen. Be joyous, not sad. For the dreams of your forefathers, the ones who sought to unionize the factories for the workers' sake, and your foremothers, the ones who marched on the picket lines in spirit, feeding those holding fast to wildcat strikes and anti-scab lines, dreamt to this day. My only regret to them is that we will not have before us the same material prosperity. But then again, what is material to the soul but temporary debt? In what is debt but the bribery of the titans? Agape, Yabutu, Kanonya. Peace.
Really don't mind if you sit this one out. My words but a whisper, your deafness a shout. I may make you feel, but I can't make you think. Your sperm's in the gutter, your love's in the sink. So you ride yourself over the fields, and you make all your animal deals, and your wise men don't know how it feels to be thick as a brick. Sandcastle virtues are all swept away in the tidal destruction, the moral melee. The elastic retreat rings the close of play as the last wave uncovers the newfangled way. But your new shoes are worn at the heels, and your suntan is rapidly peeling, and your wise men don't know how it feels to be thick as a brick. And the love that I feel, it's so far away, I I'm a bad dream that I just had today. And you shake your head.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome, welcome back. Of course, that was Cat Stevens with Peace Train, one of my all-time favorite songs. When I, you know, there are certain songs when you hear them, you can be transformed, or not transformed, but you can be kind of jettisoned to that time period. And Cat Stevens' Peace Train is one of those songs. I mean, it gives me so much hope. And then the beginning part of Jethro Tull's Thick as a Brick. Just one, absolutely one of my favorite openings to any song. It's an incredible piece of artistry, what they did there. It's, I don't have much to say, really. I have been kind of thinking, you know, what am I going to say after playing for you that reading? You know, it's, I'm probably my worst critic. I like the writing, or the majority of the writing with it, but the reading, you know, I can pick out spots where I wasn't happy and blah, blah, blah. And I could have probably read it 50 times and still wouldn't have been happy with it. But my goal was to read it, to sit down and read it through all at one sitting, and then take what I had and stitch it together, because I wanted it to be as real as possible. And I didn't do much editing. I had to start and reread certain parts, so I had to edit those together. But I didn't read it 20, 30 times and then take bits and pieces and scrap it together. No. Soon I'm going to be launching another podcast, and the podcast is going to include speeches that I give and speeches that other people give. And I think it's a big jip when a person gives a recorded speech and then you find out that the speech was actually produced over the course of a day or two, where the person read it 20, 30 times and then stitched together everything. No. That's, I'm going old school when I give a speech. You know, if there's mistakes in it, then there's mistakes in it. If there's not, then there's not. I believe that's the only way you get good at something. Anyway, this was really my first time ever reading something that I wrote in this fashion. I used to do it when I was in high school. I haven't done it in years, though. So, but I'm not really concerned about what you think about my reading. I'd like to know what you think about what was said. And like I said, click on the link which is included to go and read it. You'll notice immediately that there's some things different in the draft that I published and what I actually said. I corrected some stuff while I was reading through it. And so, there's slight differences. You know, I didn't really get a chance to, or I really didn't dedicate any time to talking about where this did come from. I explained the story, and then kind of gave a little bit of kind of background by just saying, well, you know, I had some things that I wanted to say. But here's where it really originated from. A little bit over a year ago, I produced a podcast called the Empty Ploy of Employeeism. And it was for Class War Battlefield. And it was really a spare of the moment podcast, to be honest with you. I had nothing to do, and so I wanted to record a podcast, so I opened up my dictionary. I was always intrigued in, you know, learning what the word employee meant, and I picked up you know, what employee meant, and then I looked at the word employee and said, oh, you know, it looks like empty employee. So I looked up empty employee, and then I just kind of stitched together the whole philosophy of what I felt employee meant from that. Truthfully, this is how a lot of my podcasts come come into being. But recently I've been changing that because I really want to contribute to the well-being of this planet. And you can't do that if you're just going off your head all the time, right? But anyway, it kind of started there. And what really motivated me, other than everything I went through, is just the number of people I see who are just, they're so unhappy. And yet they don't understand why. And I'm perceptive enough. I understand why. I not only understand why, but I know, you know, some of the history. And I feel, because I am smart, you know, for many years I've kind of downplayed that, but I'm smart in many ways. I feel that because I'm smarter than some people who can't articulate it, articulate what they feel, it's my job to speak for them. And I've talked to enough people to realize just how unhappy they are. And it's been, in many ways, encouragement for me to appreciate what is happening in the world. As I come to realize that these people want a voice. They just don't know how to speak it. So this was the beginning of that. Now, I mentioned in the piece, popular sovereignty. Now, I know what popular sovereignty means. I 100% know what it means. I know what it was used for. But there is, I think, the need for a rekindling of popular sovereignty and a rebranding of popular sovereignty. Because it is an important phrase. It's one that we don't use anymore, but it is an important phrase. Popular sovereignty can be utilized for each community and for each community of communities. And that's how I utilized it here. To me, popular sovereignty is the will of the people at the grassroots level, in a community, and in the surrounding communities. It's not rooted in liberalism or conservatism. However, kind of like David Corton, who's a classical conservative, I subscribe to that. I subscribe to the idea that big institutions are problematic because they usually become dislodged from citizen control. Popular sovereignty to me is democratic in value or in origin. It is the idea of each small populace electing representatives in the true sense, an individual that goes to represent these people and the will of those people in a broader congressional setting. And through that representation, they hold sway over these institutions. Whether it be government, which is a word that I really don't like because the idea of government has always been, from the time that it was implemented, thousands of years ago, it's always meant to govern. So maybe we need to start thinking beyond governments, which is a dangerous idea, because there's a lot of rich people who like the idea of governments. But maybe we do need to start thinking beyond the term, the idea of governments. Because things are getting, they're going to get worse. And we're going to have to start doing some pretty innovative things to make sure that they don't spin out of control, which they probably will. But popular sovereignty is that ability to control these various institutions on the ground level and making sure that they don't get too big or too out of control. You know, I suppose a government is not problematic until it becomes secretive. And we have a secretive government. But that's how I feel popular sovereignty should be defined. In the coming weeks, next 3 weeks actually, you'll be getting this the week of June 10th, so it'll be the next 3 weeks. I will be publishing another document, which is going to talk about democratic values. Now, you notice I keep saying democratic instead of democratic. I do that purposely, because I am not a Democrat. I am a democracist. I believe in democracy. For the life of me, I do not understand why people do not look at words like democracy and Democrat and say, wait a minute, those don't match. Think about it. If a person's for communism, they're a communist. If they're for socialist or socialism, they're a socialist. If they're for anarchy, they're an anarchist. Why the heck in the world would somebody who is for democracy be a Democrat? Why is it that we have a government that is democratic when we want democracy? A government which rules over communism or a communist country is called a communist government. Same with socialism. If it was an anarchist government, then it would be anarchy. An authoritarian government, well, we interchange authoritarian and totalitarian. But, you know, and usually we don't even call... That's funny how we don't call authoritarian rulers authoritarianists. We call them kings or dictators or something like that, which is kind of weird. But, yeah, so I'm a democracist. I've been a democracist. And, well, I've been a democracist now for about a year. But I'm going to explain what that's about. And, I suppose sooner or later. I don't know. I was about to say, I suppose sooner or later it's going to get me in trouble. I keep talking about these things, right? But it is what it is. You know, we live in America. Everybody and their mama has a public opinion or a personal opinion. I have one too. I just so happen to read a bit once and I put mine out there, right? All right, peoples. Thank you for listening. Please, let me know. What do you think about this thing? Let me know. All right? Much love. Stay strong. Peace. There's a shadow on the faces of the men who sent the guns to the wars that are fought in places where their business interest runs. On the radio, talk shows, and the TV, you hear one thing again and again: how the USA stands for freedom, and we come to the aid of a friend. But who are the ones that we call our friends? These governments are killing their own, or the people who finally can't take anymore, and they pick up a gun or a brick. Thank you.